Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I just have this message in which I want to bring you. A listener says, I'm feeling so inadequate after watching the video of Princess Kate Middleton. I'm just coming through my own cancer journey and following chemo and radiotherapy. I'm just getting my very curly hair back. I'm bloated following steroids and I'm certainly not looking like she does. She appears totally normal. And listen, I know people respond in different ways to different treatments and people can have different treatments for cancer, but I do absolutely understand what you're saying. And actually, we have GP Dr. Maura Finn with us from the Ennis Family Medical Centre. And Maura, we're going to talk about RSV. That's why you're with us today. But do you understand that response from our listener who watched that Kate Middleton video last night and might be experiencing cancer treatment and feel and look very different?
Oh, I absolutely do. I haven't seen it, so I can't really speak of it properly. But, you know, everybody's journey is very difficult. That sounds like a little bit of a line from the internet now, but it is true. And, you know, people have different types of chemotherapy. People have different regimes. People have surgery or not surgery, you know. And, you know, if somebody is looking glamorous because they have a whole team to support them, and, you know, do my hair and makeup, that's one thing. Most of us don't have the ability to do that. And if that person, she shouldn't feel inadequate in any way, shape or form. She should feel like she's going through her journey and she's just doing the best she can to kind of recover. And it takes time and it takes a different length of time for everybody. And Kate may be looking like that on a video today, but tomorrow she might be feeling very, very different. So yeah. I don't think we should actually take much notice of it, really.
All right. Well, listen, thanks very much for taking that question. But we do want to talk to you about RSV because people are hearing a lot about this in recent years. And even at this point in our season, our flu and virus season, we're hearing a lot about RSV. Is there a good bit of it around?
Yeah, you see, I mean, the thing is, we are more aware of RSV, and that's great because, you know, there's been campaigns to help awareness, and it's really important because RSV is, you know, every year we have the seasonal viruses, and every year they're predictable, and people don't realise that. RSV usually hits in October, so, you know, it's usually about 3 or 4 weeks after the schools go back. It's not just about the schools and creches, it's about seasonal viruses because of humidity and temperatures and crowds as well. But usually in October we get RSV, it peaks usually around November, December. Flu symptom usually starts a little bit after it, so we actually can predict these things. But RSV is primarily, it's a common, very common respiratory virus. It causes mild symptoms in the majority of kids, but 90% of our children are exposed by the age of two. So you can see how common it is. Unfortunately, a certain percentage of them do end up coming into primary care for to likes of us, and we kind of see them and manage them, hopefully. But there is an increasing number that actually do end up in secondary care as well and are hospitalised because of the complications of RSV. And when the virus literally goes into the lungs as opposed to just being in the upper respiratory areas.
OK, so it goes right down into the lower part of the respiratory tract.
It can do. So you know, it always will start with an upper respiratory, like sniffles, you know, it's snotty nose, the usual thing, maybe a little tiny cough. And in some children, that's all they get, maybe a mild temperature as well. But in a certain percentage, then it goes into the small tubes of the lungs, and it's called bronchiolitis in that situation. And basically, the smaller tubes get blocked with mucus, and it causes this really kind of wet cough and a bit of a wheeze as well. And often the children are actually in relatively good form with this, but they have this bronchiolitis, bad out sounding cough. Occasionally as well, it goes into the spongy bit of the lung, and that causes a pneumonia. And it's really how the child manages it is that's the most important part of this. If they're becoming distressed, and what we look for in them is if the respiratory rate is increasing, so the number of breaths they're taking in a minute, but actually you'll just see that by counting them and seeing that it's more often than you would normally expect. Or if it's like there's a big effort in their breathing, they're using their muscles of their tummy or the ribs, the muscles in between their ribs to improve their breathing. They are getting distressed and they're getting tired. Small babies get tired when they're doing things like this. And then they don't feed as well. They get dehydrated. Their number of nappies goes down. and they can have a temperature as well. And if those situations happen, and it can happen quite quickly with some, they need to be seen. They need to be seen in primary care or in secondary care if it's getting quite, if they're very concerned. And what we often say in these awareness campaigns is that parents need to listen to their instincts around this. You know your child, you know your child is struggling, and, you know, be aware of what we call the red flags and work on them. Even if you're not there yet, kind of go and get seek advice, seek help. And we're very happy to see a child and go, yeah, this is okay, go home, we'll see you again in the morning. And the same thing happens in hospitals frequently. They'll take a child in, look at them, maybe give them some oxygen support for a short period of time and send them home. So it doesn't have to be a bad outcome, but don't wait. Don't sit on the child that you're concerned about.
So what are the primary care treatment options then if someone feels they need to go to the GP?
Well, usually there isn't a treatment, unfortunately, for RSV. So like most viruses, and you know from COVID and flu, we don't have a tablet to give you. It's not an antibiotic or anything. So it's supportive treatment. So what we do is we look, we see, OK, is this child in danger or not? And we often will assess them later on in the day or the next day as well. But it's about watching the signs of dehydration, respiratory distress. Sometimes steaming can be of use to kind of help them kind of shift some of that kind of mucus that's in their tubes. And, you know, keeping their temperature under control with paracetamol and making sure they're feeding well enough and not getting dehydrated. But it's watching, really, that's what it is. There are sometimes people will use treatments, but there's very little evidence that they'll make any difference.
So like a steroid inhaler, which is hard to get a young child to manage because you've got to use that mask, don't you? Is that any use for RSV?
It's not really. Like, we can use Atrovent and steroids and stuff, but they really have very little benefit. In occasion, it depends on the child's background as well. There may be something else there that could kind of give you an idea that maybe something might work for them. But actually, for viral infections like this, it really is supportive treatment is the basis of it. So knowing when to be worried is probably the most important thing, and knowing when to kind of go, OK, child needs to go in, maybe needs to be put on a drip for rehydration, may need a little bit of oxygen to kind of help with their breathing so they're not putting as much effort into it. They're the most important things. And then also knowing not to let other children be exposed to it, you know. So it's the smallies, it's the premature babies, it's the young infants under 6 months that are most at risk of developing complications. So if you have a kind of an older kid coming home with those symptoms, try and keep them separated a little bit. Try not to have kind of the snotty two-year-old kind of kissing the baby. All of these things make a difference. Washing hands, all the old cough etiquette and viral etiquette we were talking about with COVID, they all matter hugely. And there was a move actually in the last couple of years about not letting people who call cuddle or kiss your newborn baby.
That's right, and yeah.
It sounds awfully because, you know, people want to, but but it actually probably this time of year, it is probably better to avoid that because a lot of adults will have RSV and really have very minor symptoms and it doesn't really bother them hugely and they may not know.
And it's worth saying that for both adults and children, it's the very severe cases are rare. But if we could just focus on adults for a minute, like it can affect some adults quite badly as well, can't it?
It can, yeah. And actually, you'll have often a situation where you have a child who's unwell, parents are trying to can't put the child into the creche because they're unwell, and a granny or granddad is minding the child, and they may have some problems like COPD or some other respiratory issue. And if they get RSV, it's a simple enough virus, as we know, but they can get complicated and kind of a bad presentation occasionally. So it is something that actually presents much more in adults than we realise. But we were primarily concerned with the smallies because that's where it circulates most. With adults, you know, they're often very much, we do check them for swabs for flu if they come in with a bad presentation sometimes, and there's sentinel practices around the country that do that, but they're checking for RSV now as well. And we're seeing more of it than we would have thought.
Right. And in general terms then, you mentioned the hand washing and all of those things that we were told to do in COVID, because most people just don't want the inconvenience of being sick. I mean, even if you were never going to end up in a hospital or at a doctor's door, you don't want to be getting these things.
Oh, you don't. No, but it's almost inevitable that you do get it. But I suppose the severity of it is the big issue. But hand washing, absolutely. Cough etiquette, keeping your child home, keeping yourself home if you've any symptoms. There's a few other things, though, that are really important from a kind of a public health point of view, which is like breastfeeding is definitely protective for RSV, especially for those smallies, you know, less than 6 months old. And smoking definitely increases the bad presentations as well. So, you know, so other kind of issues need to be addressed in some households. But it is, like I say, 90% of children under two have been exposed to it. So it's the presentation, it's how severe it gets. That's what we're most concerned with, really.
All right, Maura, thank you very much. That's Dr. Maura Finn there joining us on RSV. Maura is at the Ennis Family Medical Centre. And just to let you know, we were talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the programme, there is a new HSE immunisation programme which is designed to protect newborn babies against RSV. It's now available for babies born between September of this year, so now, and February of next year of 2025. And you can find more information on the RSV vaccine on the HSE website.